Unmute, please.
Well, we could now have discussion on that wonderful reading and even skip the talk, because everything was there about how to evolve, that man is an evolving spiritual being. But we'll attempt to bring up some other points. Now, theosophy is divine wisdom, power, and knowledge. It is nothing new, nothing invented. It's age-old, timeless wisdom. It's not only ancient, it's really timeless. Theosophy considers humanity as an emanation from divinity on its return path thereto. And through every period of evolution, it starts from the purest spiritual state, but then becomes involved in matter. Because in each period of evolution, there's always more to learn. So we come from the highest of the previous state, we'll say, condition, and then we become involved in matter. The vices of men, and what happens is as we get involved, we really fall in love with our reflections, and we become a little too involved with matter, too in love with it. The vices of men become steps in the ladder, one by one, as they are surmounted. That's a brief passage from Light on the Path, which is one of our short devotional books. So there is no standstill in nature. We're either moving upward or downward on the ladder of evolution. So to fight and conquer, we need a quality called virya, which is the dauntless energy that fights its way to the supernal truth out of the mire of lies terrestrial. It takes spiritual energy to transform our nature, as well as endurance, which never gives up. Life is a constant battle, especially if we want to heed the dictates of the soul and emulate the masters of wisdom. The masters have their own struggles, it is said. To the very end, the inner and personal man and the lower animal self are engaged in a constant struggle for supremacy. In the secret doctrine, it is stated, this war will last till the inner and divine man adjusts his outer terrestrial self to his own spiritual nature. Till then, the dark and fierce passions will be at eternal feud with his master, the divine man. End of quote. So we must not only develop virtues, but also conquer hidden vices. So karma brings us these hidden vices that we have. They are unveiled one by one. And if we overcome the vice on one plane, it can transmute itself to another plane. So we've been at this for 18 million years, but in this period of evolution, but we're still struggling with our vices. It's a long and arduous process. But karma is the doctrine of hope and responsibility. So it is an encouraging idea that our weaknesses and vices can become stepping stones as they are fought and overcome, enabling us to mount a higher rung on the ladder. Now, the Buddha said, better than a man who conquers in battles 1,000 times 1,000 men is he who conquers himself. He indeed is the mightiest of warriors. And that's really something to consider. Alexander the Great conquered the known world by the time he was 30 years old and basically felt empty. It's like, is that all there is? But he had not conquered himself. The Buddha conquered himself as Krishna, Jesus, Lao Tzu, and others have. And that is spiritual evolution before our very eyes. So, as concerning man as an evolving spiritual being, we first must ask ourselves, what is it that evolves? Now, science goes from particulars to universals. Detailed observations of matter are made, and they arrive at conclusions by means of the mind faculties and the senses. Religion, on the other hand, posits a supreme God of creation. Now, there is the third method, and that is of the mystic or the occultist, who unifies religion with science. And theosophy is a scientific religion and a religious science. So the mystic and the occultist unifies religion and science. And theosophy posits a triple line of evolution of body, mind, and soul, not independent one from the other. Evolution is a rhythmic growth where one is dependent on the harmonious unfoldment of the other two. Spiritual evolution does not oppose spirit to matter. This division is actually an illusion. In fact, spirit and matter are two aspects of one and the same reality. Just as law, the second fundamental, and evolution, our third fundamental, are two aspects of deity. We only separate the three in our minds to gain an understanding, but we must synthesize to gain a truer understanding of the self of all. So, we're going to call this spirit matter because it really is one and the same, two aspects. Just as law and evolution are two aspects of deity. So, one, we're bound together, eternally bound together. At all times, there is spirit matter. We may lose sight of one or the other, but they're the substratum and always there. So one may predominate our consciousness, but neither disappears or separates from the other. Both work together, hand in glove, in the great work of evolution. Human beings are neither wholly spiritual or wholly material. We have our organs and faculties to function in the natural world, and we are composed of living intelligences. These are nature spirits, angels, devas, gods, shining ones. In the Hindu pantheon, the body is composed of 330 million gods. That's the powers and potencies which we possess, which are allegorically described. So, spirit matter can be thought of in this way. We are actors and actions, not separate. Just as our deeds are the effects of our thoughts, thought is the real plane of our actions. Thoughts are things, teaches the philosophy. Actions are desire impelled or thought engendered or both. So let us now, in the next part here, consider the voice of conscience. It is the final and supreme seat of judgment. Spiritual evolution is from that point of view, but it can deceive us. This is because it is changing and evolving. So, where is it and where does it come from? Conscience is the voice of our accumulated experiences. Experiences gathered and assimilated in the past, the past of this and prior lives, and prior systems of planets long lost to memory. Our evolving spiritual senses require three lights. These three lights illuminate our conscience. These are the light of the will, the light of intuition, and the light of reason. When working together, these qualities will make our actions charitable, our emotions harmonious, and perhaps most importantly, our thoughts patient. So, reason gives energy. Intuition gives heart knowledge, and patience adds fortitude and steadiness. So the challenge for our evolutionary gain is to gain control of our passions, our desires, our feelings. But there's more to evolving as a spiritual being. There are seven qualities called paramitas. Paramita means a perfect virtue. And we looked up, we had never done this before, but we looked up paramita. It's not on etymology.com, but it is on Merriam-Webster. So its Sanskrit origin denotes a bridging across, something traversed, also something that is transcendent. That's what paramitas are. So we'll just give the English terms for the paramitas. They are charity, harmony, patience, dispassion, energy, heart knowledge or intuition. Lastly, will, energized creative activity. So, armed with these, the spiritual warrior conquers the lower self. Our task is the culture of conscience. So, we shall attempt to embark upon the ocean, leaving behind the shore of darkness, to the new world of immortal life. As spirit beings, using matter to raise the self by the self, raising all of the lives in the process. So the power of perception in each one of us is the Supreme Spirit. We cannot tell just what a human being is, just what his possibilities are, or what knowledge is his, either by looking at him or hearing him speak. It is said that only an adept can really judge the karma of another. So we all make snap judgments and there's gut feelings, but that's just the surface. So we should always pause, especially if we make a harsh judgment, because harsh words and harsh judgments, they will come back on us. They will boomerang on us. So we look at spirit, spirit is an all. Whatever differences we may be able to perceive in any other are not differences in spirit, but differences in range of perception. All our powers rest upon that one spiritual nature. The limitations placed upon the power to express are not made by any external force whatever, but are made by ourselves, by the ideas that we hold. Our range of perception is governed by the ideas we hold in regards to ourselves, our nature, and the life about us. So we don't want to create a vicious cycle in which we become involved from one single fact that we constantly identify ourselves with, this, that, or the other condition. But this self-identification is the very power of spirit. So spirit is a two-edged sword. And in order to wield a two-edged sword, we must first be masters of the blunt instrument. We invite questions and comments at this time. Yes, SL.
It was mentioned that for us at this time, learning about and gradually controlling the passions of our senses and personalities is our main task. And yet in the Voice of the Silence, it says that even once thou hast mastered those dark passions, that your duty to man and nature is not yet completed. So what is that higher duty that is part of our spiritual evolution that we have to aim towards even beyond our own self-mastery?
Well, if one is on the path of liberation or the path of renunciation, and they're distinct paths, but they don't diverge necessarily until one has advanced to a higher spirit, to a high spiritual state. Our duty to others is what is due. Our duty to nature is to be good stewards, and our duty we all need one another. We're all interconnected, entwined by thought and spirit, really, to the entire world. and really to those who came before us, especially those that we knew that had a direct effect upon us. So the voice of conscience, the light of conscience, needs to be shown on everything we do and in every task and every small duty that we have before us. So we need to put others first without ignoring our own needs, of course. Any further thoughts? Or yes.
Well, so yes, having mastered ourselves, it's one thing to master oneself, but the old phrase comes to mind, don't give a man a fish, teach him how to fish. But then there's also, don't just teach him how to fish, teach him how to teach others how to fish.
Ah, did everyone hear that? Not only to give a man a fish does not require any effort whatsoever on their part, and life is full of effort and knowledge. So to teach a man a fish, teach a man to fish, they can provide for themselves. But teaching the man how to teach the man how
How to
to
teach
fish.
others.
What's that?
Teach a man how to teach others to fish.
Teach a man how to teach others to fish. That's training the trainer. And it's a whole other avenue. It's sharing the light of mind instead of just sharing food or thoughts.
MDW has his hand up.
Oh, okay. We're for some reason the screen is okay. MDW, you're not okay. MDW, go ahead.
Now we forgot what we were going to say.
Oh, you can come up with something.
Yeah, I know it can, but
JCS, Jason.
JCS is
Okay, JCS.
needs to speak.
Well, what came to mind in that wonderful analogy about teaching is that we need to get to a point of discernment where we're not imposing our choices and knowledge on someone else, but we're wise enough to learn how to set up the right questions and practices so that they develop the motivation and the ability to help themselves and help others. That's a tough one. That's a tough one.
It is MDW.
Yes, it just sprang back into my head again. Oh, all right. Don't we have to consider also if the student wants to learn, if the student wants to know? Because what do we say in theosophy? Theosophy is for those who want it. So don't we have to have a desire?
Right. Well, there's an expression we've heard. He who is convinced against his will is of the same opinion still.
Yeah, all right.
And if you don't want knowledge and are not ready for it and are perfectly satisfied with things as they are, which many people are, then it's wasted words. It's better to find someone who cares to listen, and we can listen from what we can, we should not think that we have all the knowledge here just because we're students of theosophy. We're all students of life as well. Yes, in Theosophy Hall here.
Well, if we're going to do our duty, and if we're going to teach, we have the opportunity to teach somebody. Well, it's up to them as to whether they are going to accept the gift of knowledge that we have to give them, but it doesn't show negatively anything on us because we did what we were supposed to do. And as long as we don't expect anything in return, then, I mean, we've done what we could. It's on the receiver. We can give somebody a gift, but if they don't like it, they don't want to accept it, that's on them.
So if we are not transactional in our thinking, if we are not expecting something in return, and that in itself is difficult for many, for most perhaps, to be, you know, not to expect thanks and praise for doing someone a favor. If someone holds the door, if you hold the door for somebody in the store and they ignore you, that's like, okay, well, that was just the right thing to do. Not slam the door behind somebody or let it close on them. Because we don't need thanks and praise for that. But some people are offended if for every little thing they do for another, they want to be thanked. And as students, we should thank someone for holding the door. But it's not, we don't need thanks. We should thank others, but we shouldn't, if we don't expect thanks, then we're not disappointed when we don't get it. That's fine. So?
Well, if humanity is a collectivity of evolving spiritual beings, and every human being we meet is an evolving spiritual being with a timeless past of experience. Just because they're not on the same path that we are in this particular period of this particular day or lifetime, does that mean we are completely helpless in pointing them out in a way that's good for them? Isn't there some way we can work with where they are?
Oh, well, there is. Generally speaking, unless someone is really, really doesn't want your help and rejects it. We'll give an example of, we don't know if it's a good example or not, but a homeless person maybe. You may have come from a restaurant and you see a homeless person and you have leftovers and you're thinking, wouldn't it be nice to give this homeless person leftovers? And they reject it. They want money. They want to be able to make their own choices. So, and it is that we, you know, there's an expression, beggars can't be choosy, but that's not really true. They can be. Because everyone can make a choice. And we should not be offended if they don't want our food, they want money. Then it's our choice whether we give them money or just keep our food. But we should seek out those that know less than us, it's said in the philosophy. And not be preachy, but if we can offer some advice or encouragement. And often it's not advice, it's encouragement. People need encouragement. They need a smile. They need to recognize their humanity. Because in today's, just like spirit and matter are one, in today's world we have connection and separation. We have the connection of the online world and the separation because there's just so much information and disinformation side by side. So people today we think are starving for connection. They may be glued to their iPhone or their Galaxy or whatever they have, their tablets. But if there's an opening, a natural opening for a connection, then perhaps we can just be there. In between they're scrolling on TikTok. Yes, MDW.
Well, it's simply, our humanity. What is our humanity? When we're kind to each other, that's our humanity, because we see ourselves in others. So, kindness breaks down many barriers, that we find people just wanting to talk to us just because we were kind to them.
Yes. Yes, kindness goes a long way. Everyone appreciates kindness. Everyone wants it. That's so we have a chat here. We have been around for 18 million years. Why has it been so long for humanity to evolve? Well, it's because we got involved in matter. Too much. And now we're trying to, some of us, not everyone, because many are still enamored with matter and stuff and our senses, that we're still, we're still not free of it. It's, and as 18 million years sounds like an eternity, but if you take a gander at the chart on page 125 in the Ocean of Theosophy, these cycles are so immense. They're just, 18 million years is the blink of an eye. But we should be more advanced than we are right now. MDW, did you have a follow-up?
Well, just the fact that we are enmeshed in matter is really is our purpose. Our purpose was to become enmeshed in matter and to uplift it, to bring it forward. And by doing that, we have learned that we are able to put together a physical form. Something which can operate on a plane of existence and communicate with other beings.
Yes.
But in the reality, we are all one being. We are all connected to that oversoul, they call it, or Alaya, or whatever. We're all part of that. And that's what our identity should be, rather than the body.
Yes, so we are spirit matter and we are God men. Now, the man is more than an animal. But if the God within us is degraded, the infamous power of production results from it. We can produce the most heinous things, the most harmful things. Now, the animal in man elevated gives us unimaginable and great powers of service and strengths. As both God and animal, high and low, exist within us side by side. And we have a hand here in Theosophy Hall.
Sure, we can think about how long it takes to fully evolve for a human being to fully evolve, but we're not just here to evolve ourselves. We're here to evolve all of them. And there's a process that we have to go through. We have to interact with and take the form of and infuse all of matter. So
Yes.
the process is the process. It doesn't mean, wherever we are, it's not because we're not good enough. It's just that that's where we are. Like in terms of the evolution of humanity in this cycle that we're in right now, Yeah, we're screwing up some things, but as an analogy, we are in a place of evolution right now where essentially the human race right now is the age of a teenager. We haven't figured it all out yet. We don't know how powerful we are, and it's all a matter of learning.
MDW?
No.
Okay. Yes, in the back here.
Is there a way to evolve spiritually that doesn't harbor an atmosphere of superiority? Thinking that we're at the top of the food chain, entitled to all the fish.
Well, we are at the top of the food chain, and that's but the whole universe exists for the evolution of man. Everything either was, is, or will be man. So all the matter below us, all the lives before us, they have consciousness but not self-consciousness. And in those that are above us, the masters, the adepts, they are working within the law. We are learning. They learned as we once do. So they do not violate the law. They know the law. And they are one with the law. They're one with deity. They too are evolving as well. It's, evolution has no stoppage whatsoever. And everything is spiritual. It's just a matter of consciousness, degree of consciousness. In the back here.
Saying about being aware of spiritual pride. So even if we're progressing along and we're aware that, maybe we're improving and becoming more spiritual, we can't, it's an odd thing to say, but we can't lord it over other people. Because we need to accept others where they are. And we need to focus on ourselves. And Friday's meeting was about being aware of yourself and studying yourself. So that we need to focus on ourselves and help others and be aware that they're struggling as well.
So we need to operate with the fully developed voice of conscience, not the one that rationalizes behavior. Now, we are at the top of the food chain, but we've degraded the lives below us and abused them, and they are future men, all those lives. So, yes, MDW.
Yes, because we're not separate from anything. I mean, that's the greatest illusion that we live with. We think everything is separate from us, but we are not separate from anything. And the more we study spiritual knowledge or theosophy, we come to understand that we're an electromagnetic world in which we live in. The atmosphere is filled with electromagnetic energy. So, that is one point. But the other point about our evolution, if we look at the universal picture, it says that we are eternal beings. What does that mean? Well, again, you can look back on that chart of, that we're talking millions and billions and trillions of years, but it's eternal. It's eternal. Just giving you a concept of a peek into eternity.
Yes, we learn by contrast. So spirit and matter are not separate, but in our minds, we can separate them. The reality is that they're one. And light and darkness are the world's eternal ways. So we need contrast to learn, but we need to raise the self by the self and rise up above it so that we can see the needs of our the lower kingdoms, which are all within us, all the lower kingdoms and the elementals, which swarm around us and the whole world, their lives too. We,
chat?
Yeah, was there a chat? Okay, we didn't see it. Oh, it didn't, you sure? It's not coming up on my screen. That's the old chat. That chat has been chatted. Go ahead at JCS.
Well, as self-evolving entities, we have to really move through life with a tremendous amount of humility and empathy, don't we? Because if we find ourselves in any moment looking at the plight of another, a person in the food store, in traffic, a homeless person on the street, an irate relative, whomever, and we feel ourselves separate from them, more advanced in our philosophical understanding, we've broken that oneness that is reality. So in the moment, perhaps a better stance is to look at the other, consider what's going on, stop and think, wow, when have I experienced that? What would have helped me in word or deed when I was caught in such an experience, and work from that basis, not lording it over the other, but identifying with the other and searching our own experiences with ways to assist.
Yes, so when we look at others, and we often use homeless people as an example because they're really suffering. And when we look at their suffering, we hopefully don't think, I'm better than that, I am better than thou. How did you get yourself in that situation? But what we lose track of is that we could be there ourselves. If not in this lifetime, in another, for sure. We're sure we all have been there at some point. And there's an expression that a little bit of knowledge is a dangerous thing. So as students, we're always trying to learn, always striving, always in this great ocean of theosophy, this great ocean of knowledge that surrounds us. And often the ones that are the most advanced are also the most humble. Yes, in the back here.
So what can we do then for ourselves in order to enable us to focus more inwardly, to allow our higher nature to come through and lift up our lower so that we can help other people? What can we do for ourselves?
Well, we can read, we can study, and we can apply. We read the devotional books such as The Voice of the Silence and the Bhagavad Gita and The Light on the Path. They're three little books, but they're instructional manuals. We read, we practice, we apply. We fail, but each failure is a success because we've learned something. As long as we don't keep repeating the same failures, we'll fail at other things, but that's okay. The light bulb, there are thousands of failures that finally resulted in a working light bulb. And now we don't use incandescent. We have LED bulbs that use less electricity and last a long, long time. So today's class is something that, you know, we are evolving beings. We're put here for a reason, and we're not here for our qualities. We come back for our faults. Now, there are beings that are masters, and they could be walking among us unaware, that are coming back strictly to help. They've balanced all their karma. They have no personal karma, but they've taken on the karma of helping us. So that's their mission. Yes, MDW.
But they need companions.
Yes, they
They
do.
need people to promulgate this philosophy, because it. The great difficulty of this age is it's very materialistic, and it's very difficult for these spiritual beings to descend amongst us. So, yeah.
Yes, it's polluted. They can't operate in such a polluted atmosphere. So they work behind the scenes. If they were to work openly, they'd be worshipped as gods or hunted as devils. So they do need us, the companions. So we need to conclude here to honor the cycle of the hour.
Excuse me.
So, yes, go ahead.
There was a second chat. I just think you need to and just put it out there. It says, not sure if you have a copy of the HPB daily quotes, but today's quote is related to the magnetic pull we are talking about.
Okay, thank you. Well,
Yeah.
we don't have time to comment on that, but that was not a comment. That was really
Yeah.
a piece of advice. So we need to close. And we want to remind you all of our Wednesday class, Friday class, and next, our anniversary is next month. And also, next week is the two paths of spiritual evolution. So we thank you all and have a great day. Make it a great day. You have the power.
You have the power.